Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Yesterday, Guardians lose the final game of the three-game set, so they lose the series to Toronto. The big brouhaha was Jose Ramirez getting plunked, and he is not expected to play tonight. I don't know if that's the official I don't think he's officially been ruled out, but he's not expected to play tonight with this forearm injury from getting plunked. And Stephen Vogt, Guardians manager, went on MLB Network Sirius XM Radio and not thrilled at all.
He's probably not going to be able to play tonight. He's pretty sore. Thankfully, x-rays were negative. We're hoping it's not going to be too long. But yeah, I'm not sure if Jose won't start today. He might be available off the bench late game, but we got to be careful with this. Obviously, you know, got him in the forearm. Like I said, thankfully no breaks, but probably going to need another day.
So that was a pretty straightforward update. He also had something to say after the game yesterday. Tanner Bibee had something to say after the game yesterday. Mm-hmm. And it appears to me the Guardians have put up a better fight after he got plunked after the game and today than they actually did in the game where he got plunked. Stephen Vogt came out for about 3 seconds. In the words of Twitter, he got dog-walked back to his own dugout. Nobody got thrown out. Nobody else got plunked, and that was it.
I do like when a manager goes out and just feels the... like it's usually when a team has been playing a little lackluster like this team has as well. And like Lou Piniella, I always thought was the best at this, of just understanding when the team needs some sort of pick-me-up and then just losing his mind, throwing bases, doing whatever you got to do. Like, and even like when like it felt like the ump yesterday did not want to throw out Vogt, and Vogt didn't really press it at all, but he didn't want to throw out Vogt. Do whatever you got to do to get thrown out in that instance.
I think that's a really good point. If you are going to be chirping at Toronto's dugout... So that's why the umpire didn't. Basically, the umpire was like, "It's not my place. Hey, let's calm down. Go back to the dugout." You're right. That's as much restraint as we've seen from an umpire because it didn't involve him. I think if you're Stephen Vogt, you make your case. If your team's playing sluggish, if your team's not playing their brand of baseball, which is what Stephen Vogt has been saying since I believe March, this is a great opportunity to light a fire. I think if you do it all the time like Lou did, I think it starts to backfire because then people start playing too tight, especially in today's day and era where guys aren't used to that level of tension. But
it just feels like a lost art in the game these days. Why is that? You don't have the manager just going out there and just raising hell and being a nuisance and using it as the spark fuel that it once was.
Tito, not known as a guy who would do that. Tito did that. 2023, Tito did it. There are games in each year that I can say Tito found a moment to make a statement by getting tossed out of the game.
It doesn't have to be all the time, but like we used to point to certain instances where you'd have the one or two times a year, and you'd be like, "Oh, they started playing, you know, five games over 500 since he's went on the big tirade and made a big scene about everything." It shows people that you care more importantly than anything, and it shows the team that you got some fight in you.
So as of right now, it's thought to be a insignificant injuries. X-rays or MRI came back negative, so that bodes very well for Hosey. But I do think if this turns out to be anything more, or if this leads to a couple week injury for Hosey, you know, when you play hurt, that tends to lead to another injury. If that does happen, I think you're going to see a lot of people shut it down for the Guardians very quickly. Now, I'm not talking about the Guardians. I'm talking about Guardians fans just kind of check out.
Oh, yeah. This lineup without Hosey is not even a lineup.
And that's probably like, it was so funny. You and I 2 days ago did the thing of like, what emotion do you feel most as a Guardians fan? And I was like, I'm a little frustrated. And I think you were closer to anger. And we were trying to do the 5 steps of Guardians fans' emotions. And I was like, I think you're closer to apathy than I am. I think I've sped past apathy. I don't know what it's about yesterday's game.
Oh, I told you apathy was coming. It was coming down the tracks. I got like 2 weeks away from apathy. You moved past apathy?
I think I might be there.
You're there now. Okay.
If they're apathetic, why should I care? Like if you're gonna kind of waltz through this part, and I know it's a tough part of the schedule. I know you got another tough part of the schedule coming up. Okay, you got some injuries going, you got some of this, that, and the other, but honestly, it's the healthiest the rotation's been in a long time. The bullpen is actually kind of stabilized here. Like,
Yesterday was one of those games, Nick, where it was like, why do I care as much as you about these outcomes?
Yes.
That's how it felt. And watching that game and watching Manzardo not know how to play defense and Bo Naylor not know how to just look up when he's trying to throw him the baseball, little things like that that we've seen over the past couple of days. It's like, why am I investing so much of my time and energy when they on the field don't seem like they care?
And we've got a lot of whispers that the Guardians are going to be more sellers than buyers. I just don't think this team has it. And we can get into what the it is here in a minute. And it's almost similar to like the Cavs. Like the Cavs, the Cavs the last couple of years have been front runners. When everything's going right, the shots are falling, vibes are immaculate. And then you get into the playoffs and it gets physical and it gets nasty and the shots don't fall kind of the same way. You can't get into the same rhythm, right? And they just completely fall apart. That speaks, I don't want to say culture because that's a loaded word. That does speak to you don't have the right guys in the room. And I kind of feel the same way about this Guardians team. Like they had something last year. They don't have it this year.
Oh, maybe we saw a little bit of that last year in the second half of the season when they played 500 ball for the final 2 months of it.
But even then they at least bounced back.
They did. They rallied. In the postseason, they rallied and they got themselves together to then obviously see what happened in the Yankees series. But they did. They rallied in a pretty impressive way. It's just for 2 months of baseball, because they had that big lead, it did just kind of look like whatever. But we didn't hammer them because they had a massive lead.
But, like, I'd love to come out here and, you know, we got Mac Robinson tweeting about what a cheap shot it was. The Blue Jays aren't facing. It's like, to hell. The Guardians didn't
Mackie
put up
wears
a fight.
Different Guardians or Indians jersey every single day that
and
he works.
And occasionally a Tiger's hat, but
that's
it's his dead grandpa's hat. Come on now. We allow dead grandpa's
you, and
hat.
And he'll let you know it. Don't worry about that.
Condolences, by the way.
Thank you, Nick.
You're welcome.
Condolences, by the way.
Thank you, Jonathan.
My condolences were better.
It happened
However,
first.
I can't be up in arms. One, you hit Vladimir Guerrero Jr. twice.
You started it.
And listen, we can say what we want about the rules of baseball and the unwritten rules of baseball. You got away with hitting him once, and I know it wasn't intentional. Like, neither of the pitches looked to be intentional on Vladimir other than he crowds the plate and they wanted to brush him off the plate. Okay, fine. You hit him twice. They're not going to hit Will Wilson in the butt cheek.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to hit.
Yeah, that's not really the message.
They're not going, like, you are going to go for the other team's best player, and, like, you missed it. Listen, Vogt missed an opportunity to go out there and get thrown out of the game, and your pitchers missed an opportunity to turn that into a case. If you really felt so bad about it, don't go on MLB Network, on MLB Network Sirius XM Radio and bitch about it. Don't talk after the game like you're Tommy Toughnuts over here. Go ahead and show it on the damn field. Because that would have been the fight you were looking for yesterday. But again, I'm starting to get heated about it. Why should I get heated when you didn't care enough to handle it in the game?
Well, at least they're showing something after the game.
Oh, no, that's crap.
No, at least they're showing you something after the game.
They've proven you it doesn't matter what they say after the game because they blatantly come out and say things that are not factual.
No, it'd be worse if they just kind of sat there and just kind of, well, it doesn't really matter.
No,
that would be worse.
There's nothing they could have said. Yeah, I mean, Tanner Bibee basically said, well, what goes around comes around.
I mean, I would imagine both benches.
Do you see him in 2026 again? When do you see him again?
I would imagine both benches were warned after the Hosey hit.
Yeah.
And I would imagine then, yeah, I mean, that's at some point.
Then go get thrown out.
Well, you can get thrown out, and that's what I said I thought Vogt should do, but we don't want to just turn the game into a bean fest either, with pitchers being removed every other pitch. At some point, you do have to call off the dogs.
They didn't even call on the dogs.
Well, I mean, clearly they hit Guerrero. They hit Guerrero twice. They hit him twice.
The dogs were on Quaaludes.
The proper response would have been for them to the Blue Jays to do something again, and then it would have been a back and forth. Like when you hit them twice compared to one time, the Blue Jays did more damage. Or excuse me, the Guardians did more damage than the Blue Jays did. If you're a Toronto fan right now, you're thinking all sorts of things about the Cleveland team.
Yeah, I don't think they're thinking anything because they think, oh, we hit Jose and he's out the next game. That's fine. But to me, that's like everything that is symbolized by this Hosey thing. To me, it symbolizes exactly.
I was more mad about the errors. I'm more mad about the bad defense. I'm more mad about Bo Naylor falling asleep while picking dandelions, trying to not pay attention. I don't know that it's related to not sticking up for a not turning a game into a bean fest.
Franchise player.
No,
it's not a bean fest. You hit him next and see how they retaliate.
They hit Guerrero twice, did they not?
Okay, but they hit him Wednesday and then they hit him yesterday.
I mean, I don't know that I need to see them hit another Blue Jays player to keep that thing going as if that's the big retaliation. What I wanted to see was Vogt get extremely angry and Vogt do something from that perspective. I didn't need them to go out there and all of a sudden bean Andrés Giménez in the head to make a point.
You don't have to hit him in the head. You hit him in the ass.
Throw one at Ernie Clement.
Actually the only part of this that I agree with the Guardians. Don't hit him in the hands. Hit him in the butt. It's not, I don't want to say it's not that hard. It's very hard to purposefully hit somebody and control where it's going, but that's the point. If you're going to hit him in the butt. If you're going to make a case, hit him in the butt cheek, and then we move on. But I just want them to do something. They didn't. The only thing they did was post game, which means nothing. You think the Blue Jays were sitting around being like, oh man, Tanner Bibee said what goes around comes around.
No, they didn't think twice about it.
Yeah, they didn't, because they did nothing. They called off the dogs. The dogs were comatose in the dugout. And by the way, that's the way they played the rest of that game. And that's how you arrive at apathy for your fan. Like, even when they were playing poorly last year, in August into early September, they played with a pulse. They played like they gave a damn. You might have seen errors, but you didn't see errors because people just didn't have their head up because they weren't making, because they just were completely distracted or completely lethargic. We've had, in the first 80 games of this season, we've had more lethargic baseball than we did in last year.
Yeah, can't defend that. It's been miserable. It's been absolutely miserable. They don't seem like they give a damn. I get that. But if we're playing by the unwritten rules of baseball, the Guardians struck twice. The Blue Jays answered. That's it. You don't have to do something more beyond that. And again, I wish Vogt would have gone out there and made a big case about it and got all riled up and everything like that. But like ultimately, that was the exact appropriate response. And then that was it. It's over. Wash your hands of it. Or else you're going to have the next time Hosey comes up, or the next time another one of our players comes up, you're going to risk them getting injured too.
Oh no, we're gonna take a 540 OPS player out of the lineup. Quick hits coming up.
They responded and hit Kwan, and then Kwan's on the IL as well. And then all of a sudden, was it worth it?
But you just did the biggest if ever. Like, they also could not. Like, the point is, you had the last say in this, and you just completely walked away. By the way, I agree with you. I'd rather Vogt get tossed. Didn't do anything.
And that should have been it. Like, that's where, if you really want to stop it, if you're Vogt, that's what you do. You go out there, you get tossed, and then it's like, all right, we made it a big deal, and it was what it was. But continuing to have guys just get thrown at each other as if that shows some sense of life, that doesn't do it for me.
216-474-0092. We do have quick hits coming up at 2:40. We got Chris Giménez, Guardians TV analyst at 3. We got Spencer Davies joining us at 4:20. We'll talk the Cavs in the draft. We'll also talk, free agency begins on Monday. There have been a couple names linked to the Cavaliers in free agency we'll also get to. We got the lead coming up at 5. But it is NFL Friday. 216-474-0092. At Nick Wilson says, at Jay Peterlin on social media. Social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Does a Jose injury change the Guardians' approach over the next 6 weeks? And the biggest reason the Guardians are missing Josh Naylor? That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. I like Josh Naylor as a baseball player. I totally understand the business of moving on from him, and I think with every nice start, Slade Ciccone is proving that the Guardians made the right move there. That said, the biggest mistake was not replacing whatever $11 million you would have spent on Josh Naylor. I think the biggest thing is replacing whatever attitude or passion that Josh played with, because it's apparent that is one thing this Guardians team just does not have enough of.
Yeah, they're missing something. And you think, like, I mean, I can only have so many roster spots designated for people that are supposed to be, I'm not saying mascots or cheerleaders, because that's just offensive to anybody involved. But, like, you're paying Austin Hedges. He's got to be a factor in some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. You're paying some of these guys that they have to be the veterans that come up and say, hey, listen, you can't stand for this. And when this happens, you have to act a certain way.
Well, and to think to like the 2016 team, Mike Napoli was the obvious, because I think, and jokingly and sometimes not jokingly, players from that team will be like, yeah, I didn't want to do the wrong thing because I was a little afraid of Napoli. Mm-hmm. But they also had Juan Uribe. And again, the difference there was like Mike could play. Juan got shown the door in August because he just was no longer the same player. But you've got Hedges, who's not playable offensively. You could have just, I think it's apparent you've got so many young guys and they're buckling under the pressure when it comes to hitting. Respectfully to Stephen Vogt, who said yesterday, I think we're getting more quality at bats here recently. You just had, I mean, June was your worst month of the season. You were the worst offense in baseball the month of June. So not great. And like when we say enforcer in basketball, that means like a guy that's going to get you six fouls if you need it.
Right.
That's not what I'm saying. But I do think like the mistake was not trading Jimenez or Naylor, but maybe just not having enough veterans in the room to get these guys pointed in the right direction when you're in the middle of a bad situation like you are right now.
And I think in that instance, by the way, I think Jose is supposed to be one of those guys, but obviously he just got injured on that play, so we took him out of the equation.
He can't stand up for himself.
Yeah, like maybe Carlos Santana is supposed to be in this spot. Maybe Santana is supposed to be the one that is stepping up in some sort of way. When they gave him the money they did and mixed with the veteran, I mean, he's been playing baseball for a million years. Maybe he should have been the one to step up and maybe lead the charge there.
See, what's tricky about this, and I actually, the Guardians have done, like, I remember hearing a lot about some of the work they've done just with locker room dynamics. And it's interesting because I think there was like a sigh of relief for some in the clubhouse when Josh Naylor got traded, because he is Josh Naylor, and he is a huge personality, and he is opinionated. I think we're right back to where we sometimes worry. Like, I think the Guardians are too nice. I think they are. I don't think they play with enough edge. And the only thing I can think of is, well, Naylor was one of those guys, you took him away. You didn't really replace him with anybody, but you did bring back Austin Hedges. Had to do that. And now you're too nice again.
Well, and even for some of the Spanish ball players, like Jimenez was very influential. And he was very good for their not only their development, but also kind of bringing them along, too. I mean, I know we think of Jimenez as a younger player still, but he was with the Guardians for 5 years. Like, he was there for a long time. He developed a lot of relationships, and he really showed some of those guys how to play.
But I just think it's as simple as, you know, listen, I'm not giving up on him. I'm getting close to apathy, because that was really frustrating. The number one thing this team has to have, if you're going to be light on payroll and you're going to be light on veterans, you're going to be light on this, that, and the other, the number one thing you have to have is fight.
Which is shocking that you have so many young players and they don't have some essence of that. Like, these guys should all be playing for their jobs. That's why I yelled about Jonathan Rodriguez for 3 days now. Like, how are you the guy not running out ground balls when you shouldn't even be in the big leagues to begin with?
So fair. I also think some of these dudes are paralyzed by their own struggles. Like that, I'm not trying to make an excuse for
him. That's what I wondered in the moment. And I didn't want to use it because I thought it would be unfair in the discussion we were having last segment. But I did wonder if they're just so inside their own heads, because each one of them are playing for their jobs and they're so just solely concerned about themselves individually, that having a team element attached to this and what you're supposed to do in a team sport just kind of passes them by. Because really, there is a part of this. And I mean, I think it's really tough in a lot of different areas to be a great teammate. But like, when you're so individually focused, and I get it. What does being a great teammate do for you if all of a sudden that takes away a couple hits or something like that, or your production isn't as good, and then you're not, and then you're down in the, you know, AAA trying to get, you know, fight your way back?
Well, and I think with Stephen Vogt, I don't think Stephen's having a bad year. I don't think he has anything. I don't think he knows what cards to play at any given moment. That's not his fault. None of the facets of this team are firing on all cylinders that he can fall back on it. There are micro mistakes that drive me crazy. The Matt Festa thing last week that I think was a fair gripe by Guardians fans. Him not losing his ever-loving mind yesterday and getting tossed out of that game. That's a little bit more than a micro for me, but it's you know, in the pantheon of things, I still think Steven's going to be a good manager. But like this is what makes managing in baseball so difficult, is last year's the easy way to do it. Mm-hmm. You were the best team in baseball for 90 games. You hit a 50-game skid. You bounce back at the very end onto the ALCS. When you've already done it in a season, it's very, very, very easy to just say, hey, guys, we know what we're doing. We know what buttons to push. Let's get back to where we are. This is where you prove if you're a great major league manager or not. When you are, I mean, we're to July. You're staring down the deadline. Who the hell knows what this team's identity is? Who knows what you can truly trust with this team? Mm-hmm. And it does seem like they're getting closer, at least with the rotation and certainly with the bullpen.
Right.
But at the same point, like last night, so the lesson that I think Stephen Vogt has to learn is...
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You can't change who you are as a manager, but you do need to be something different with every different ball club. It's no different than in parenting. Some days you need to be the hammer. Some days you need to just be a hug and a, you know what, we make mistakes and that's okay.
Yeah, and I wonder if Stephen Vogt has that many different personalities within himself. You know, like you mentioned parenting, some days you're the hammer, some days you're not, right? But if you're never a hammer to begin with anyway, then you can try to put on, you can try to play that game. It's never really going to come through.
Well, no. So, and this is a really good point you're making. I'm not saying Stephen has to change who he is, because that's how you get fired in any, as a coach, as a supervisor, anything. But do I think that you have to find a different way to relate to different ball clubs, even if a lot of these guys were here last year? Yeah. I think Tito had like three things that Tito did, and that was who Tito was. But I think Tito knew how to get the most out of each individual team, and that's what the first 90 games usually were for. Tito learning was, your team was, and then
he
responding.
Was really good at picking spots, too, and that's something I feel like Vogt just got to learn. I mean, this is part of having a young manager, going through things like what you just saw yesterday and then being like having an awareness and understanding that when you got the most influential local beat reporter we have on coming on this station talking about how they didn't have a fight in them and how it's looked the same for 2 months, maybe you got to make something look a little bit different.
But that's why I think like that was a missed opportunity by Stephen. Is, okay, I'm not yell and scream guy. You don't have to be all the time. But there are times where the only way you can show your fight for your team is not to scream at them, but to go stand up for them. And again, like, maybe this is what they need, right? Maybe they need this insane pressure where fans are really starting to get frustrated, and we have the promotion, we have the Guardians social media team just being hit with Chase DeLauder memes. I mean, maybe this is what they need.
We need something that makes it seem like it's a brand new season is what we need. I need a fresh start is what I need. And if that's DeLauder, if that's Kafis, if that's a couple different wrinkles in here, I need something that's new, because I do feel like I've been watching the same team now for a couple months and it feels like nothing's going to change. And I'm not in a good spot with it right now.
So I think that's what's interesting about this is the deadline is an opportunity to reinvent yourself. And I don't mean in guys are never going to trade for Cody Bellinger. They're never going to trade for Aaron Judge. They're never going to trade for Shohei. But there are guys out there who are two steps below that, who are pretty much universally always available, who are good everyday players, but who have that, hey, let's get on top of it. Hey, young player, you didn't run that out. What the hell? It's what Jason Kipnis was. I know Jason wasn't a deadline acquisition. That's why Jason and Frankie seemed to have some sort of heat between them, because Kipnis was holding him to the rules of the club, and I don't think Frankie liked that. So, like, you can go get that. Like, this is the thing. Like, if you really believe that you have a Tigers-esque run, meaning you can put together a hell of an August in September, and all of a sudden you're in the playoffs, and then God knows what happens after that, and we can sacrifice, or not sacrifice, we can save this season, that might be, like, it. Yes, it's important to get power. It's important to get guys who can hit for contact consistently, and maybe a two-hitter. Like, those things are important. You also just might need a little bit more leadership in that clubhouse to help a young manager and honestly to help the young guys just not feel whatever they're going through. So we don't have, again, I just won't stand for apathy. If you play your ass off and you stink, that's fine. I can root for you. I've watched Browns teams, like guys like Jamie Meter, who that team wasn't very good. You never question that dude's heart, right? Or Brian Schaefering, right? Like, that I can deal with. But when you're Sean Rodgers and you've got all the talent in the world.
There's a reason why we always got on Andrew Sandejo, for instance. It was like, you're bad, yes. But we're also seeing you're not trying.
Yeah, and now in the difference, you got your Andrew Sandejo. It's Austin Hedges. You might need a couple guys with that spirit, but who can also produce. I think leadership might be the thing that is most underrated here. Because if you're not going to care in the midst of the season, this thing could go ass up really, really quickly. if we're already fighting the apathy bug in late June.
I mean, they got to figure it out. And this is, by the way, I mean, this is the type of thing that, you know, I would, if I was a baseball manager, relish in. Like, I would relish in the opportunity, not for the leadership side of things, which is about yell about things like yesterday. I would go on all the radio shows. I would do everything in I possibly could to be as vocal as I can. And I wonder if that's what Vogt is trying to do in this instance. And he's trying to get out there and he's trying to be vocal because he realized that yesterday was a missed opportunity.
And listen, I think Vogt did it today on MLB Network Series, MLB Radio. I think Chris Antonetti did this on the Guardians broadcast. The problem is you're preaching to fans and you got to find your way to get your message to the players. I think, because there is some disconnect right now. This is not just, well, we can't hit. All right, the one way that I actually agree with Vogt a little bit yesterday is I think they are better than their output suggests. I think they're probably a middle of the road lineup at best. I don't think they should be the worst lineup in baseball. But you got to start finding ways. And I think the easy place to start, by the way, was getting tossed last night. Or how about you just say, you know what, guys, you're creatures of habits. The shortstop hits in the nine hole now. Bo, you're the eight hitter. The right field is in seventh. And just locking in a lineup for 2 weeks to let these guys get into some habits and get used to how people are going to pitch them. Because I don't think the whatever ChatGPT lineup they throw out there on any given basis is helping.
Well, that goes back to our platoon argument, which we've been now and fans have been yelling about for, it seems like a month on end, about how they just platoon everyone day in, day out. And really the problem with Vogt is it seems like if you hit a home run the day prior, now you're in the two slot the next day.
I mean, I believe I hit a home run on yesterday's show. Like, it was a great show for me.
It was a good show for you?
I'm actually in the two hole tonight. Yeah. And here's the thing. You're killing it today. Get ready to be in the two hole tomorrow.
I got the batting gloves ready to go, Nick.
Oh, those are golf gloves. 216-474-0092. It won't matter. Do the Guardians need an enforcer? Quick hits in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
From the latest news and rumors around the sports world,
go Angel, Angel,
to the sound bites you need to hear,
hurry, hurry.
It's Quick Hits.
All right, JP, we got names. Greg Schwartz of the Bleacher Report has listed Ty Jerome, Larry Nance Jr., and Spencer Dinwiddie as three free agents that he feels could fit Cleveland's offseason. Is there one of those three that interests you the most?
I'm still interested in Ty Jerome. I am. I didn't know. Does that count? Does Ty Jerome count even though I... Wait.
Yes, because they're going to pay out the ass for him in luxury tax, so yes.
Yeah. Am I interested in $82 million Ty Jerome? Sure, it's not my money. What do I care? Do I like the fit that he has? Yes. Do I need him to be a better postseason player? Of course I do.
I just think don't make him your backup point guard. That would be my official recommendation. I really do like the idea of Larry Nance Jr. coming back. I'd be a little concerned if your backup bigs are Dean Wade and Larry Nance Jr., but yeah, I'll never be like, please no Larry Nance Jr. I think he's still a really useful player.
Yeah, I remember at the deadline, I was talking about Larry Nance Jr., and I thought that was going to be something that could come to fruition, but hey, yeah, I'll take Larry Nance Jr. back. Do you see all the different rumors about a potential parting of ways with DeAndre Hunter?
I have not.
Yeah, that's the new scuttlebutt around the NBA circles, that DeAndre Hunter could, and they're starting to map out different areas and places. What a bad idea that would be.
So you get him for a half a season, and then you replace him with like another 6'1 guard?
He just fits so perfectly here. I think it's about the money more than it is anything else. He's worth $23 million this year, and I think then 24 or 25 the following year. So it'd be a strictly money move to get you under the apron. But yeah, that's the new rumor and hot thing of the day around the Cavs.
Trading DeAndre Hunter when Isaac Okoro and Dean Wade are on your roster would feel like a step in the wrong direction.
No, for sure it would. Yeah, call you crazy.
Yeah, am I allowed to melt down about trading for a player that I think is really good but not an essential piece? No, I think DeAndre probably is an essential piece.
You wanted to put him into the core four.
I mean, I think
you want to take Jared out and put him into the core four. That's a significant piece to this team.
I think we know who the new core four is.
Omaha!
All right, so Ace Bailey's reps told a team in the top five not to pick him, right? That was the everything everyone was talking about yesterday, and his agent came out and even defended him. By the way, he brought Evan Mobley in the mix, too, which I thought was an interesting play. Didn't see that one coming from his agent. He's like, well, Mobley decided he didn't work out for the Cavs. Nobody complained about it then. It's like, hey, if I'm Mobley, I'm like, why are you even bringing me into this mix here, guy? Mike Forio on ProFootballTalk.com, though, says the NFL draft needs an Ace Bailey. And the idea behind that being that you start telling teams, I don't want to go and play with you.
No, you've already had it. It's not good for the sport. It's not good for the NBA, by the way. I mean, it's. I think for some people, it's not for me. I'd like player empowerment. For some people, LeBron running the NBA is a big problem. Wait until guys like Ace Bailey do it. By the way, Florio's just being a troll.
So let me read you a little thing here. He says, it's better for the players. And until the players have true freedom, we should applaud, not criticize, the players who choose to try to make a bad system work better for them.
Yeah, he's wrong.
Okay,
Florio's full of it. But to the Ace Bailey thing, I really... The Jazz seem to be prepared to take this to the limit. And they should. Like, if you drafted him, you can't do... I think it was, like, Dominique Wilkins who got drafted by the Jazz and then traded to the Hawks. But I think he actually played a season for the Jazz before getting traded to Atlanta. This was in 1982. So this is why it's an I think. I don't remember it. I wasn't on the planet yet. But, yeah, you better be prepared to do everything. And, by the way, Ace needs to kind of look at, like... Washington would be a much worse situation for you than Utah. Put up with Utahns and get out there and start developing yourself, young man.
I think in Washington, he thought he'd just score a lot and then ultimately get paid.
I think it's going to happen in Utah, too.
I see it that way for some reason. Well, at least he reported. I mean, excuse me, he didn't report. His other teammate that they drafted reported. He hasn't reported yet.
Have you seen the pictures or the videos going around of his agent?
No. Is he a chotch?
I
gotta Google him now.
I don't even know how to like explain what the video.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Wiz, it doesn't look good.
Mm. He's former Cavalier Sharif Cooper's dad.
By the way, why'd you have to add former Cavalier Sharif Cooper? There's nobody else here that remembers outside of the studio that remembers Sharif Cooper. Did he have a 10-day contract in Cleveland?
A few.
Okay, he had like 3 in a row.
Yeah, Cavs legend.
A 30-day contract for the Cavs. But I like the input there. Let's go with Oscar winner J.K. Simmons is throwing out the first pitch tonight for the Guardians. Hope it doesn't plunk Hosey. Would hate to have to wait till after the game to have a commentary on that. Would J.K. Simmons make you more likely to go see the game?
No, J.K. Simmons alone? No.
Whoa.
What's your favorite J.K. Simmons movie?
That's exactly where we're going to go.
All right, fine.
It can be...
3, 2, 1, go.
Well, you were going to do 3, 2, 1?
I was going to do it, yeah.
Okay, 3, 2, 1 for the love of the game.
Oh, I was going to say Juno.
Oh, Juno's great. That's the point. Like,
For love of the game, too.
I don't want to meet Brad Pitt. I'd sit down and have a cerveza with J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, but while you said go exclusively to see J.K. Simmons, I mean, obviously there's a baseball game that happens as well, but am I going to go with the idea that I would watch him throw out a first pitch and then basically disappear? I don't even know if he'd stay for the game.
I've gone to see the Black Keys throw out a first pitch before. Then I went for the baseball game, too. It's not the only reason I'm going, but does it add incentive?
There's not a person on the planet Earth that I would go to go watch them throw out a first pitch. I can't think of anybody.
The ghost of Toby Keith.
I wouldn't need to. I've met Toby Keith. I checked that off already.
Oh,
we're good.
Oh, so sorry about that.
We're good. Backstage passes when I was a little kid.
I'm trying to think. Tiger Woods. I'm trying to think of who you might secretly... Have
Tiger's a fun one. That's you're getting closer now.
All right.
Because with that, at least so what I would do there in that instance, though, and this is the least relatable thing to anybody out there, but what I would do is I would then get a media pass and then I would go down to the field below and then I would make sure I have a run in with Tiger. So that's like a guaranteed meeting with Tiger that I would then invoke.
All right. I got to tell him myself. I did that to meet Mike Hargrove.
Of course. Why not?
I have such a fondness for Grover from his time in Cleveland that when I heard he was there, I might have definitely went to that game and be like, oh, because he had a suite right next to the press box and I knew about it.
Listen, we don't get many benefits doing this job. People think we get loaded benefits with this. We don't get many benefits, but that is one. And so you'd be silly not to take advantage of that.
It was great. He was very nice to me.
Oh, that is nice.
He did say my name wrong.
What'd you guys talk about? How do you say Nick wrong?
He called me Mick. And I was like, I guess I'm Mick.
Why did he go with Mick?
I don't know. You realize how many times famous people have said my name wrong to me?
How? And
it's because it's Mick.
You have the easiest name to ever exist.
I get the other one. I get the other thing that ends in Ick. No. Maybe it's, I'm a bit of a mumbler off air. I tend to just project, and sometimes on air, but I just tend to project less because I'm a little bit more soft-spoken off air, and that's what happens.
I'm surprised that they would get it wrong, but that's okay. He meets a lot of people in a day. I guess that's fine.
Oh, no, I think it was just he didn't hear it right.
Have you ever interviewed him in the radio game and like here at the Fan?
Yes, but I don't remember when.
Oh, you like him enough to go to the game to then like have a meeting with him, but you don't remember when you interviewed him?
I mean, it was like when I was at Knights.
I mean, I'm just wondering. Okay, so yeah.
I've done like
I didn't need you to be like, it was June 17th. 2000 and I didn't need
so
that.
So you just needed like the roundabout?
I didn't know if there was a special question or two, or maybe there he got your name right and was like, Nick Wilson, so nice to be here.
No. My favorite thing I've done with any manager in Cleveland is I did my Tito to Tito, and he was clearly not amused.
Oh yeah, I could see that one not going.
But then he let it die, and then when it died, we started laughing, and then he gave him that was a Sean Connery, not great. It's been 2 years since I got to practice my Tito.
All right, I'm up.
Millsy.
Yeah. The NFL has informed teams. We need a quick one. Ah, oh, too bad.
Go ahead.
Oh, he gave me the... No, this was not going to be a long one. This is going to be like a 20-second one. But it matters for you because you're a supplemental draft guy. The NFL has informed teams there won't be a supplemental draft this summer. Last player selected in the supplemental draft was 2019. People are suggesting the draft is dead.
I like that you've called me the supplemental draft guy.
You baseball supplemental draft one time. You went on a whole thing about it and it mattering and it doesn't matter. Just like in the NFL, there's
been
like
Josh Gordon.
Tell that to Bernie Kosar. I know. Yeah. Like there's been legitimately like four or five players in both leagues, by the way, that have mattered out of the supplemental draft.
Jared Gaither?
and have made an actual impact. Wasn't the flying Hawaiian Shane Victorino? Wasn't he a supplemental draft pick as well?
Isn't that the Rule 5 draft?
Oh, that even might be that. That's another draft you love.
Yeah.
You love the non-consequential drafts.
Tell that to Johan Santana. I don't know why I said Santana
You said Johan a little funny, too. But that's okay.
I'm very European.
Yeah, naturally.
So, this is because of NIL, right? If there's just no rules in college football anymore. So if you wash out of one school, oh no, I'm in the portal now and I'm onto this new thing and I'm just going to go make $250,000 at Sacramento State. It's a high bar for Sacramento
State. That is a high bar, but you know, they can afford it over there.
Oregon State.
Do they have a football team, Sacramento State?
They're trying to get into the FBS.
Really?
They just got denied by the NCAA and the guy who's been like the NCAA buster, they just hired that lawyer to try and get them to basically appeal and reverse the decision, basically intimidate the NCAA into allowing them into division, I almost said 1A, FBS football.
And now I know why Sacramento State was on your brain.
Man, I missed the supplemental draft.
Omaha!
Let's go here. Duke star Cooper Flagg went number one to the Mavericks. Have you heard about this? Have you seen about this? Have you heard about this? And former NBA GM Bob Myers had a strong take about the young man on ESPN's second round coverage last night.
The unique thing about Cooper Flagg is he impacts winning more so than a lot of players. I'm going to say something that might be controversial. Victor Wembanyama got a lot of attention for the number one pick. I could see Cooper Flagg impacting winning more than Victor did in his rookie year. And Victor is a fantastic player. And the reason is Cooper Flagg is NBA ready as they come.
Fair or unfair?
No, it's fair, and it's actually something I think he's going to end up being right on because it misses a lot of context. Because if the bar then is that you have to be better than Wemby's rookie San Antonio Spurs team, in the case of winning and winning alone, would that team win, like 15 games?
It wasn't good. They got the number four pick the next year.
I think they won like 23 games last year. Like Wemby's great, but Wemby's not impacted winning in a big-time way. Meanwhile, Cooper Flagg enters a situation between Anthony Davis, and who knows if they'll all stay healthy, but between AD, between Kyrie, between Klay Thompson, probably is going to win more than 23 games. Yeah, safe bet there.
The only thing pushing back against that is they are in the loaded West, but so they could end up being like a 45-win 10 seed,
which will still just absolutely overtake anything that Wemby did his rookie year.
That was my initial take, was it like, wow, this really is apples to oranges. It's almost not fair to Victor Wembanyama. If you put him on a team with Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving as a rookie, I would dare say he would probably be in the NBA playoffs. So, yeah, it's just a little unfair there by Bob Myers.
It's a completely unfair take.
But he'll end up being able to take the victory lap when Cooper flags in the playoffs this year.
Exactly. All right, we have a war. According to the Daily Mail, we have a war. It's the claws are out, according to the headline. Jordan Hudson, we know her. She's very popular. Do you know Linda Holiday? It's safe to assume. It's just if you didn't, that's Bill Belichick's ex-girlfriend, ex-fiance might have even been. Uh-huh. The one he was dating before he started dating Jordan Hudson. And they've been trashing each other on Instagram, apparently. They've been going back and forth in these Instagram barbs between each other.
What happened to women supporting women here?
So I guess Jordan Hudson found in one of the houses that she took over that Belichick used to own that she's like gifted to her. She found like this big long letter where Linda Holiday basically blames Bill for the whole reason why everything was failing and falling short in the relationship. And Jordan Hudson just wanted to poke fun at her and did. And then Linda Holiday took a lot of barbs, jabs back and forth. And now we have fighting in the Instagram streets between the two of them.
I thought Jordan Hudson was supposed to be an old soul.
Apparently not.
This is not the move of an old soul. It's a move of a 24-year-old gold digger.
Which tracks.
What are we doing here?
Which definitely tracks.
It definitely does track. But like, what are we doing here?
I just love the fact that we got beef on Instagram between these two.
I also think like Jordan Hudson is winning.
Belichick, what are we doing?
You've stolen.
Get your house in order here, Belichick.
You've gotten $9 million worth of property from an old man who's going to be dead by the time you bear children.
Do you think Belichick cares?
No,
I don't think he does either.
He gets to break off a slice once a week. He gets to go ahead and look like big man on campus because he's got a 24-year-old smoke show on his arm. And by the way, $9 million in property probably isn't diddly squat to Bill Belichick at this point.
No, it shouldn't matter to him that way. I just think it's funny that we have two people fighting on social media platforms over Bill Belichick.
Team Linda. All right, we got to say
always Team Linda. She was very classy. Every time you saw her out in public, elegance the
Not
right way
hussy.
To put it.
Not a hussy, like other Belichick, Jordan Hudson, like other Belichickian paramours there.
Very demure.
I forgot what the other one was. It's very demure, very something. Chris Jimenez, Guardians analyst, talks about the Gardo struggles with us in about 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.